Hello, and welcome to the Art of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane, and I believe that trusting your intuition is the best way to live your life with meaning and purpose. Each week you will hear about how you can connect, develop, and trust your intuition through interviews with other guests and my own personal experiences. Join me to understand how your intuition can guide you towards a life full of meaning and loving purpose. Hello and welcome to the Voice of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane and I'm your host for this podcast. And today we have got a very exciting guest on. Now, Zach Beach is his name. And he is a love coach. Now, when we started sort of chatting on Podmatch, we were discussing, you know, about love coaches, because I've not had a love coach on here. We've had relationship coaches, but not a love coach. And it was like really interesting, but I don't know what questions to ask him. So I haven't got any questions organized or anything like that. And we're just going to go with the flow today because I think you're going to get so much out of it, especially when we start talking about that journey of love, you know, and how long it takes to travel just 18 short inches. But no further ado. Oh, remember to subscribe, share, and like the podcast so everyone else can enjoy it. But I'm just going to bring on Zach. Welcome aboard, Zach.
Hi, Susan. So happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're looking forward to it. I'm going to ask you some riveting questions when they come to me. But at the moment,
I'm so ready. Just listen to your heart. What does it want to know?
Okay. So the first thing we're going to ask you is tell us a little bit about you. How did you get to be a love coach? Mm. I know you're a yogi and all the rest of it. I want to get an understanding of you and your background.
Yeah. So thanks again for having me. It's wonderful to be on your show. I loved your intro. And it's true. I am a love coach because I believe, in short, that love is the reason that we are here on this planet. And my life mission is to help people bring more love into their lives. So just as you might get a gymnastics coach to help you learn gymnastics, or a violin coach to help you learn the violin, you can also use a love coach to help you improve your loving relationships. That includes loving relationship that you have with yourself, with your romantic partners, but even your friends and family and potentially the world. So I love helping people discover the love that they are and discover the potential that they have to love unconditionally to others and, of course, the world. And this path started about 15 years ago, where I came to the conclusion that love is the reason that we are here on this planet, and I decided to devote myself entirely to love. And when I began this path, I realized how hard that was going to be. There's no love incorporated that you can apply to a job at. You can't go to school, not yet, to major in love and minor in compassion. So I knew that I had to carve out my own path, just as many of your listeners are carving out their own path in order to live fully in line with their truth. I too discovered that love is such an incredible and multidisciplinary emotion, way of being, way of living, and way of seeing the world. And I've continued to explore that now for about 15 years. So I think of my work in the world as being on the level of the body, the heart, and the mind. On the level of the body, I love to teach yoga, to read poetry, to get people to be in touch with their bodies. And of course, the source of intuition, which is also in our bodies. And I'd love to get into that. But I also work in the level of the heart through poetry, because that's the language of the heart. And on the level of the mind, that's where coaching comes in. That's where working with people one-on-one in workshops and other trainings can really help to give people the proper actions that they can do and future goals that they can work towards in order to improve the quality of their loving relationships.
Wow. And I absolutely agree. You can't just work in one area, can you? It does have to be that holistic approach to it. But there was one little thing there I picked up, and we're going to go a bit deeper into that. So here we come. This is the probing questions. Oh, didn't really need to use that word. Okay. So you were talking about unconditional love. Mm. What is the difference between love and unconditional love?
Well, we have two types of love, if you want to divide it up in that way. We have unconditional and conditional love, right? And conditional love, by and large, is what most people experience in their romantic relationships. And this is perfectly normal. These are two aspects of love that we can both think about how we want to bring into our relationships and to our lives. And conditional love basically says, if this set of conditions is appropriate, then I will love, right? It's kind of transactional, and some people poo-poo conditional love and say that it's not real love, but I think it's an important aspect of love that we can bring into our lives, because it is important in self-love to have proper boundaries, and if somebody crosses your boundaries, that you might need to take them out of your life, for example. But by and large, conditional love says, if you do these things for me, I will love you. And this is what we do in romantic partnerships. If you compliment me and be nice to me and meet my needs and do all these things for you, then I will love you. If you do this thing that I don't like, I'm going to stop loving you. That's another condition that we have, right? So conditional love is all the things that we need in order to love somebody. And unconditional love is loving with no conditions whatsoever. So wow. It's saying, yeah.
That is going to be challenging. Okay. Yeah. And a bit more about that bit.
Yeah. So unconditional love is an intention that we can all set. Some of you might know the Rumi quote that our task is not to seek for love, but merely to remove all the obstacles against it. So this path of unconditional love is one of looking at what resistance we have to extending love to others and seeing if we can remove that obstacle to allow our love to flow. And many people think that this is a pie in the sky ideal that we shouldn't even bother to cultivate. But I want to return back to this basic idea that love is why we are here on this planet, and that every human being that you ever meet in your entire life needs love. We all need love for our mental, emotional health, and of course, our spiritual awakening as well. So right now we're in this incredible loneliness epidemic. People are suffering not from lack of food or shelter in their lives. We have many of our material needs met, but we have a severe lack of love. So to me, our task as human beings is to remove our conditions for loving others and to promote a more unconditional love, including looking at the resistances that we have to not love others. And that to me stems from seeing a fundamental goodness in all human beings, what Thomas Merton calls our secret inner beauty, recognizing we all have a fundamental, untouched pure nature. You might call it Buddha nature, Christ consciousness, or just, again, inner beauty. But also, I think unconditional love stems from the fact that we're all connected. We're all interrelated, interdependent beings right now, all connected to each other. So extending love to somebody else is just like extending love to yourself, because we are, of course, all connected.
Okay. All right. In that context, what is love then? I know what love is with conditions, and I have never heard anybody talk about love with conditions or conditioned love or that sort of thing in the way that you've sort of talked about it, Zach, because you've made it beautiful. Whereas I've always been led to believe everything's got to be unconditional love. But when you're doing this unconditional love, it's almost like you feel like you could lose yourself. Having conditions, like you said, allows you to still have your own self-love and respect and honor for yourself. So I really loved how you put that forward. But when we're looking at unconditional love, when I'm loving and it's somebody with, say, conditions, like I love my partner, but if he did something and went off with somebody else, I might not love him. In fact, I don't think I would. So it is the condition, and I accept that, but that's also part of me and how I feel. So if I've got to give unconditional love, does that mean I have to accept everything that everybody else is doing?
So there are a lot of questions there. I'll answer your most recent one, which was, does unconditional love meaning accepting everything, being in a rug, letting people walk over me? Absolutely not. Our task as human beings is to love everyone, including ourselves. So you're also somebody you get to extend your unconditional love to. Part of our unconditional love for ourselves, as I mentioned before, is setting appropriate boundaries, right? And it is true, much of our romantic love is very conditional. I remember I had a coworker, he was married for 20 years, he had 3 kids, and then he said, I divorced my wife after that period of time. I said, what happened? And he said, she cheated on me. And that was it. 20 years gone. And I understand that's a big deal breaker for somebody. But believe it or not, we can create boundaries in our life. We can tell somebody we don't want them in our life and still love them. Therein lies the rub, right? Now, your first question was, what is love? And there are many ways to think about and conceptualize what love is, but I often find it helps to go to a very simple definition at first to think about what it means to cultivate unconditional love for others. And that is this: love is simply a genuine concern for another person's well-being. It is caring about somebody, right?
Well, that is so nice. Now that makes sense. Okay, sorry, keep going.
Okay, so you care about somebody, you want them to be happy, that is love. And this applies to romantic relationships too. Studies and science shows that it's important to be there for your partner when things are tough and to practice that compassion. But the reason loving relationships are wonderful is because they bring so much joy into our lives. So often happy, successful partnerships are those that rejoice in each other's joy, are those that feed off each other in what we call positivity resonance, which is another definition for love that I sometimes use. Anytime we have a genuine shared happiness with another person that stems from a genuine concern for their well-being, and together our happiness just goes up into the heavens, into the sky, right? So we love everyone and ourselves. Sometimes we need to, of course, set appropriate boundaries in our life. We have limited time, limited physical space to be with people, but our love is actually unlimited.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. You stopped. I wasn't ready for that bit. I was enjoying listening to what you were saying. That's very, very true. And I guess that's where we start to think of the difference between how we're thinking and how we're feeling. Because when you say about love being a genuine concern for the welfare of others, I have no problems at all with that, and none at all. Even for people that are not, well, what some people would call not really very nice humans, I can still be compassionate and share love. I don't have to like their behaviors, but I can still love them. And there's a difference between that. And I really enjoyed how you put that together. Mm-hmm. So my next question is, so we were looking at thinking of the way we think about love in those constraints of time and space. And yet the way we feel about love in there's no time, space, and it's coming from the heart and all the rest of it. So how do we get those two to, I don't know, talk?
It's such a lovely question, because absolutely the heart has its own metaphysics, I sometimes say. We do live in a physical reality where if I have $100, and I'm giving it to people that I know, I have to divide it up, right? 1 + 1 will always equal 2 in our logical discursive reasoning. But guess what? The heart exists on its own level. The heart exists on its own plane. And it operates totally differently than our physical reality because, and you've probably discovered this in your life, the more love you give away, the more that you have. It's incredible. And if you ask any parent of multiple children, right, when you had your first child, you had this much love. And then your second child, did you divide them up? And the person's like, absolutely not. What are you talking about? The more children I had, the more abundant love that I had for them. So that's the amazing thing about it, is it does operate on its own level. And how do we get the two to talk to each other? Well, by integrating our body, mind, heart, soul, spirit. This is why I'm a little biased when I teach and talk about yoga because yoga means unity or yoking or bringing together. And to me, that's what it's all about, is unifying these different levels of our existence. But what's really the most important distinction when we talk about how do we reconcile, say, like how the mind wants to think about things versus the heart, is this is a journey. And most people that you find on the street walking around, they are living from shoulders up. We are lost in thought, believing everything that we think. And by and large, our mind is what we call our master, but we have to turn it into a slave, right? We have to, it's just one tool. Our logical and discursive reasoning is one tool, but we can call on other tools in our being, like our intuition, like our heart space, to experience life in a totally different way.
Yes. Oh, I love that. And so when we're talking about that journey, that's where you've said it's the 18 inches from the head to the heart.
Yes.
And it is a journey that is, it's a lifetime to cover.
Sometimes many lifetimes.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, very true. So I find that really interesting. So how can we start to look at that? Like, so the head's thinking one way, and the heart obviously is feeling another way. How do we connect them? What is it that we need to do?
So I'm going to tangentially get to your question in just a second, because just today I was writing a blog post on how to communicate in relationships, because we're told just how important communication is, but that doesn't help necessarily. Knowing communication is important if we're not knowing the best way to communicate. And step one of this post, it's not up yet, is to listen, is to recognize that communication is a two-way road. And you're not just talking, right? And the thing about this, and this is what I found, this is what I teach, is by and large, listening is one of the most challenging aspects of being human. You think quantum physics is hard. You think rocket science is hard. None of those things are as hard as actually listening to somebody. Because as many of your listeners have probably experienced, rarely are we listening to somebody. We're often waiting for our own chance to speak. We're often thinking, oh, I have a much better story, particularly because it involves me. So I can't wait till I can get my word in edgewise. Our ego is also always trying to position itself in a certain way. So you're like, oh, I better say something really funny or say something really insightful after this person's talking. So I say all of this because this is what the mind does. It is endlessly ruminating, endlessly churning new thoughts, new ideas, new think me, do this. And as a result, anytime we're trying to listen to somebody, it's like there's a huge radio going on and we can't even receive them. So what do we need to do in order to truly listen? We need to turn down that internal static in the mind. Turn down the endless discursive thinking, the one that says, oh, I'm hungry, I need to do this, you need to do this, what's for dinner, what's happening this, what do I have to do in my to-do list, da-da-da-da-da-da. If your mind is there, you're not going to be able to listen to somebody. You're not going to be able to receive somebody. So how do we get to the heart? That's the first step. We have to calm the mind. We have to tame the monkey mind, as we say. We have to calm the turbulations of the mind, the waves that are continuously going about up here. And this is, again, how most people are living. They're stuck here. And one of the hardest things to do is to listen to somebody with your whole being, with the heart, with body language, with your mirror neurons, with all that you are, without getting caught up in your own stuff.
Whoa, okay. Now, I just tried to do that, and I do say tried.
As an interviewer, it's tough. I know. It's really hard. Because
I'm thinking, well, the people will want to hear something. But yes, and so it was really good. It was a really good understanding of what you're talking about, because it isn't easy to be listening and be wholly present because of everything going on. And one of the thoughts that came to my mind when you were saying that was, if people are listening to podcasts, they're still doing something else. And I know
driving,
when I've listened to
working
podcasts,
out.
Yeah, I know. And I've listened to them. I've had to replay thinking, oh, that sounded really good. I missed that bit. And I've had to replay it a few times to absorb it and get it on board. But when we're communicating with somebody, we can't do that. We can't replay it.
Oh, can you imagine? You know, even your first date, if your partner's on your phone, if your date's on their phone their entire time, you know it's not going to work.
No, no. I've had them on podcasts where I've had guests on here, and I don't know where this lady particularly was, but and I get when you're on this podcast and we video it that I have to look at my notes and things like that. But this lady, she was off with the pixies. I don't know where she was. So yes, it is really, really important to engage. So the first thing we're doing is turning down the static, that noise. And I know a good way to do that is through meditation. But how else would we look at doing that when we're standing there in front of our partner or friend or a first date, and we need to engage with them, and I don't have time to do a 10-minute meditation to get my head in the right space? How do I do this?
I love that. I don't have time to do a 10-minute meditation, because the saying goes that the degree to which you can't sit down and meditate for 10 minutes is the degree to which you need to sit down and meditate for 10 minutes. Yes. So I do realize your example is facetious, but I'm like, you know what? That might help. Like the next time you're like talking with somebody, be like, let's pause and breathe for 10 minutes and then continue this conversation. Oh. And the whole thing will transform, right? So, but you also answered your question in a number of ways. One is you mentioned removing distractions, right? And this is what's also so important. But when we get down to brass tacks of listening, I just use what the couples therapist Stan Tatkin says. He says, eye to eye, face to face, hand in hand, right? This is what we need to, like, if we're communicating with our partners, right? Yeah. Because we communicate so much more than simply the dictionary definition of the words that we're using, right? Mm-hmm. So this is also another reason why listening, of course, is so hard, is because there's all sorts of other meaning that is picked up by our being that the mind doesn't quite register or at least bring into our conscious awareness, but we can sense it. So a huge part of that is body language. Huge part of that is facial expressions. Huge part of that is just somebody's tone. And we're communicating two ways. So you too are communicating things through your own bodily expression, through your own tone. And again, if your mind is distracted, then you're not going to be able to fully receive this person. So I wouldn't necessarily say like a 10-minute meditation, but you can at least bring a certain level of intention. The same way that in a meditation practice, you might spend a few moments centering yourself, removing distractions, turning off your phone. So too, if you want to really be with somebody, you can take out those external distractions. You can spend a few moments breathing together, tuning in to each other, listening to more than the words, seeking to empathize with this person, and really seeking to understand. Right. This is another thing that comes up many times in relationships is people want to be right. Right. And there's a poem that, along the lines of, if we are arguing to be right, we have both lost. And you want to argue to understand, to empathize, to see somebody else's point of view. So that's also part of that ego, that static that we're trying to turn down, is that desire and need to be right and thereby make your partner wrong, rather than do quite the opposite, which is recognizing that any two people have their own valid subjective realities. So when you are listening to somebody, your goal is not to agree on one objective reality, which is going to be yours, but to recognize that there are two subjective realities in this space. And your job, I'll put it that way, is to seek to understand that other reality.
Oh, I love that. Okay. And it's so true, isn't it? Because we're seeing things from our own perspective. We're not seeing it necessarily from their perspective. But I like that is something you can do. You can get rid of the distractions. You can make yourself present and be there. And I often see that with children, you know. I'd put my hand up to this one. yelling at them from the kitchen because they've got the TV going and everything. We didn't have internet in that case, but they've got the TV going and you're trying to communicate with them and all you're really doing is just yelling. And it's not getting anywhere. So the only time I can remember, there was times there where I just would go in, turn the TV off, wait for them to finish whinging and bitching and carrying on, and then say, okay, guys, your dinner's ready. And that's just communication. But how important it is when you're putting it down to communicating properly and getting it there. Yeah. All right, so we've turned down the little fuzzy wuzzy bits. We've had an understanding that we need to be face to face, eye to eye, hands to hand, if that's what we can do. Sometimes that's not always as possible, but that's the ideal. Center yourself, get rid of the distractions, give yourself some time and everything else, and then you can start to communicate. But when we're talking about this journey from our head,
you're a good listener, Susan. That was a lovely summary.
Thank you. Oh, no, I did it. Yay, I'm winning.
So actually, I was kind of joking, but like, you're so right, because, you know, some of the next steps are, one, validating the other person, right? So mirroring is one communication technique that sometimes we use in couples therapy or coaching, where you simply repeat back what you think you heard from the other person. And usually that's the time when they're like, that's not what I said at all. What I really said was, and then you're like, oh, okay. So you mirror that back too. But this goes back to what I was mentioning earlier along the lines of, we all need love. And then you were like, what does that love look like? Well, it looks like connection. It looks like belonging. It looks like being seen and understood. It also looks like being accepted for who we are, just as we are. Right. So another thing many people have probably experienced in communication is you present some problem and then suddenly the person tries to fix it rather than just be with you in this problem. So some of that static is turning down the judgmental mind. Sometimes it's turning down the fixing mind. Sometimes it's turning down the mind that says, I need to be right, to not being able to having the courage to be with somebody else's suffering, right, is another huge part. And that validation is so key in helping someone feel seen, feel recognized, feel understood, and not feel like somebody is trying to fix, change, or improve them.
Yes, I know I have said that before with my partner, and I've sort of looked at him and I went, you don't want me to fix this, do you? And he goes, no, I just want you to listen. I went, oh, that's good. So it is. It's very real. And what I just got a little bit of an aha moment as you were talking then too, because you've turned around, we've turned this down, distractions and that side of it, and then we've turned down this judgment and that side of it. Every time we turn down something, are we not traveling from the head to the heart each time you're turning it down? Am I right? Is that where you're taking me?
Yes, absolutely. It's so funny because I know a lot of today's episode is going to have an emphasis on the heart because that is where our love comes from. But this is also a journey into our bodies. And I was thinking about this art of intuition, and you probably know that in our stomach, there's 500 million neurons. In our heart, there's about 40,000. And our stomach, our heart sends way more signals up to our brain than our brain sends down. So it's absolutely true. The more we come into our bodies, the more we get tapped into an understanding and a wisdom that goes far beyond the rational, discursive thinking mind. Because by and large, our, as amazing as the human mental capacity is, like all our technology and scientific advancement is, our brains are so limited. Like if I gave you a 15-digit number right now, you would not be able to memorize it. We can have like 5, 6, 7 digits in our head, at one time. So our bodies are taking in tons of information continuously that we're not consciously aware of. And this to me is the key to intuition. It's also the key to living from the heart, is getting in touch beyond simple thought and getting in touch with feeling, getting in touch with our intuition. And this is where we say, I have a gut feeling about this, right? This is our stomach sending us information that we're not quite ready for. So absolutely, we're journeying down into our bodies, into our souls. And what do we find along the way? We find our heart, we find our breath, we find our gut, where we get all sorts of important information from. We also discover emotions because we also feel our emotions in their bodies, which our emotions are also important pieces of information, right? They're also trying to teach us something. So yes, this is the journey. This is the path that we are supposed to take.
So on your path, we're going from head to heart. We've got 18 inches and mine, we go a little bit further down to the gap.
It's all connected. It's all connected. We're using, you know, obviously humans are chatterboxes. Like, we have to talk about things. So thought and requires duality and division. But even when we say gut, heart, you know, it's all connected.
So absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, sometimes we just need to have this sort of structure in place to sort of make it analytical so we can understand it. But then as soon as we make it analytical, we sort of go, yeah, now you throw that away, and we just, it's just part of the whole. So yeah.
Yes.
Before I go any further to Zach's main link, if you want to connect with Zach, is at Zach Beach Love. So that's with all your social media aspects. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And Zach's got a book out too. I'm just going to put that up on the ticker tape. And the book is called Pebbles, by Zach Beach. And Pebbles brings a mindful awareness to the ocean of small beauties all around us. And I just wanted to bring that forward because Pebbles is actually a book of poems written by Zach. And I know that you had one for the heart area. Poems were about the heart, weren't they? Or the communication of the heart. What did you say? You said something really nice. Sorry.
Oh, right. I thought you were getting, because I have another poetry book, I thought you were getting confused because my first poetry book was called Drinking Roses on Sunday, 10,000 Words to Open the Heart, because that's about how long the book was. But I did mention, you're a very good listener. I did mention at the beginning that poetry to me is the language of the heart.
That's, I told you it was nice. I mean, everything you said was nice. But I do want to go a little bit more back into the other aspect. But have you got a poem that we can share? Like, you've got
I have one? Many poems.
All right. So many of
what we've talked about is so relevant to many of the poems in this book. So this is my third poetry collection. It's called Pebbles, which is meant to conjure up a few images. One is of a Zen garden. You imagine petals raked into really beautiful designs, but it's also meant to resemble a babbling brook where it's clear enough that you can see the pebbles in the earth. And there's a number of poems that speak to many of the topics that we've talked about. There's three sections of the book. First one's pebbles, second one's leaves, and the third one is petals. And it's all about flowers. So this is a short one I'll give you right now. And it simply goes like this. I sat with a flower and it told me this. The mind will break the world into a million pieces. Only the heart can make it whole again.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that gave me goose pimples. That was lovely. And I don't know whether you know, but I do flower readings. That was part of that's my tool for connecting with your intuition. So,
oh, wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. So that's really lovely. We got time for one more?
Yeah. So here's another flower one, since you like flowers. And there's a poem earlier that equates a clear sky with mindfulness, because one thing that I always love is that the bluest sky is the one with the least things in it, right?
Yes.
So too, when we do get to calm the mind, we experience a calm and a clarity that more resembles who we truly are than any egoic thought process. So I also like this other idea that when things become clear, they have no choice but to be filled with light. So what I mean by that is, you know, I hold up this glass of water. If this water was full of mud, you wouldn't be able to see through it. But if the mud were to settle, then of course, light would naturally permeate the water. Mm-hmm. So this is a slightly longer poem because it's meant to resemble how petals or how flowers have many pebbles. How flowers have many petals.
Yeah.
And it goes like this. If you're not sure how to treat the hydrangea or any other, start with appreciation, move on to admiration, and keep going past worship until you reach the end of otherness and have no choice but to fully sacrifice yourself to the earth, corpse bleeding at the altar of union, realizing when things become clear, they have no choice but to be filled with light.
Oh, that's nice. I'm going to have to get some of your poems and pop them on my website. Wow, lovely.
Really, I would be honored.
Yeah, I'll do that. Especially, it's just nice having that and that connection and the understanding behind it. So it's really lovely. But the book Pebbles by Zach Beach is Pebbles brings a mindful awareness to the ocean of small beauties all around us. And that's what I like. So we're talking about things, which is why I do the flower reading. It's things that we just sort of tend to take for granted and we don't realize how the importance of them. And they're just in nature. They're just there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest transformations that I've encountered in my own life is learning the power of our attention and how what we see in the world is a reflection of us, that we don't see the world as it is. We see the world as we are. And love is one way to see the world. It is actually a lens with which to view the world. But earlier when we were talking about listening and how important it is to listen, that reflects this basic idea that the most precious gift we have to offer another person is our presence, not our advice, but our open-hearted, non-judgmental, loving presence. And one way to focus our attention is meditation, yoga, tai chi, any kind of mindful movement, any kind of slowing down. And there's a story I love where one meditator was asked why he wakes up 4 a.m., goes to the temple to meditate every day. Is he trying to attain enlightenment or something else? And he says, I meditate so I can notice the flowers on my way to the temple in the morning.
I know exactly what you mean. When I first started doing meditation, I think it was 100 years ago. it was a little while ago. I can remember it was really challenging to start with. And, you know, to turn that monkey mind off. But after a while, it got to the stage where I really struggled to walk away from it. I just wanted to stay in this peaceful environment. And, you know, it was just such a beautiful space to be in. And it does. It does make you a lot more aware of what's going on around you and not the busy, bright, shiny objects that are going around you. Just that. There's a plant there, you know. Speaking of that, I have the light come through every now and again at this time of year, and it just highlights this little plant that I've got growing there, and it looks like fairy lights all through it.
Oh, nice.
And it's like I noticed it a couple of days ago, and it's like, whoa, these are the little things that meditation and being aware is all a part of, isn't it? It's just, you know, seeing things that you just didn't realize you were there before. But you just didn't see it. Yeah.
No, absolutely. That's one of the transformations that happens with meditation, with a deepening of one's spiritual practice, is we realize that essentially less is more. One of my favorite phrases is that we have no time to rush, because it's quite the opposite of what we often think, that you only live once and you have one life and you have to seize the day and carpe diem, and you end up with people just running around experience seeking one thing after the next. But what we find is that when we are able to slow down, we notice more, we're here more. So I know you also use the term monkey mind, and I used it too earlier on in the interview. And sometimes I feel like the monkey mind is almost an overused metaphor. And I sometimes call it the puppy mind because we can bring a level of love and affection also to our experience, because some people get so serious in their meditation and they try a certain level of focusing, but it's just a puppy. It's going to chase after the butterflies and chase after the string because that's what a puppy does. And you would never hit a puppy, right? It just has to be trained, right? And it has to mature. And exactly what you're talking about is an appreciation for simplicity, silence, calm, less what we have, more than getting more things and material wealth. These are all natural consequences of a calm mind and peaceful way of being.
I really like, I'm going to use that. I love that idea, the puppy mind. It just, it feels like it's not so scattered, that we can mature into it. We can grow into it. You know, we practice makes perfect. Not that you want to be perfect, but still practice does. I really like that. That's cool. Now we're getting a little bit low on time. I wanted to ask, I just wanted to reiterate actually. So when we're doing this huge lifelong journey that's 18 inches long, the first thing we're doing is we're starting to turn down the static, as you called it. The next stage is we turn off the judgment, we turn off the need to respond, we turn off that side of things, and we start to slow down and really take on board what the other person is saying, what they're doing, their tone in their voice. We started to look at things like that. And as we're doing this, we're making that journey. And naturally, there's going to be times where we whoop, straight back up here again and it's like, but we need to be aware of that, and then we let that journey and we drop into our heart. So that's sort of what I saw the story being or going along as. Can you give me an idea if that was sort of right, or have you got any other wonderful messages you want to share?
So you're an amazing listener. That's exactly how it works. And it was interesting listening to you, because in describing the process, I noticed how you started to slow down the pace of your words, because that is what it's all about. I sometimes hesitate to use the word attention, because I think people have this image of being in school and the teacher slaps the desk and says, pay attention, and you wrap your feet around around the legs of the chair and sit up straight. And we think it's a level of focusing and concentration, but that's not it at all. If we really want to listen, it involves an openness. It involves an allowing. Right. So there's a few stories around enlightenment and meditation that get passed around and told again and again in spiritual communities. You've probably heard them. And one of them, a young disciple goes to their master and says, how long will it take me to become enlightened? And the master says, 10 years. And he says, what if I try really hard and I work twice as hard? And he says, well, in that case, 20 years. And then he's like, what? That's not fair. You just said 10 years. And he's like, well, in your case, 30 years. And this is the paradox of life, is often by letting go and allowing, we make space for whatever it is that we were seeking and trying so hard in order to get. So sometimes I say the heart longs to be open. It's like a flower and it wants to bloom. It wants to open. And we simply have to create the space to allow that to happen. So another enlightenment story is when another disciple goes to his teacher and he says, how long will it take me to become enlightened? And a lot of Eastern cosmology is in the metaphysics of karma and reincarnation. So he says, look over there. Do you see how many leaves are on that tree? And that's how many lifetimes it's going to take for you. And the guy didn't like that answer. So he's like, that's ridiculous, and storms out of the room. Another person walks in, how long will it take me to become enlightened? And he says, do you see how many leaves are on that tree? That's how many lifetimes it's going to take. And he looks at it and says, oh, is that it? And in that moment, awakening. In that, suddenly, that's awakening.
Yes.
So slowing down, relaxing, opening the heart, opening your ears, silencing the mind. This is our task, the ultimate task to ask of any human being.
And as far as love goes, it is just across the board. Because it doesn't matter who you're talking to, whether it's a close partner or the person serving you at the local, you know, shop. We're doing the same. And I guess that's one of the things I've always done. Every time I go through the shopping center, I always talk to the person who's serving me. I always acknowledge them. Mm. And it's that's part of connecting with others, even if we don't have to or don't need to. We can do that. And it doesn't cost anything. And it's really nice. Gosh, it's true. Not.
Love is free. You can offer it to anyone. And you are tapping into unconditional love and what it means to love everyone. And there's two main ways that I find we can extend love to others. One is through loving kindness, as you probably have heard this idea of metta or maitri. And loving kindness is that goodwill towards another human being. So sometimes I love to walk down the street and just repeat loving kindness mantras to everyone that I see. I could be on the bus, I could be somewhere else, grocery store, person you see, loving kindness mantra. May you be happy, may you be free, may you touch great and natural peace, may you know the natural joy of being alive, all of these things. So we can extend our goodwill to others. But another really powerful mantra that I found is what's known as the just like me mantra, which is another way of extending love and connection to another person. Is you just repeat, that person is just like me. That person just like me has hopes, dreams. They want to be happy. They don't want to be sad. They've made mistakes. They're trying their best. They have fears and things they are ashamed of and emotions and people that they care about and lost ones that they've loved, just like me.
Yeah. Wow. That was so well said. I'll give you my little version of it.
Mm-hmm. Tell me.
Okay. I wasn't as good as that. Absolutely not nearly as good. So my little goal was, if somebody was giving me a hard time or I was, you know, having issues with somebody or didn't feel comfortable, or I would turn to them and shoot them with rainbows from my heart.
Shoot them.
I would just, here, have some rainbows, have some. And I had rainbows because I couldn't do a color, because it was like, no, I want to give them some love, want to give healing, want to give light. And it was like, oh, give them rainbows. So I would shoot them with rainbows, but I had to face them. So it came from my heart. It was really strange, but it was the same token. I didn't have those beautiful words you had going, but I was sending love. I was just shooting them with love. It was just all these lovely rainbows, and I could visualize it and I could do that. And it was really funny nowadays, whenever it happens, it's just like straight away I just turn to them and I'm instantly giving them love.
And they know, they feel it, you know?
So it was definitely not as nice and cleverly put together as yours, but it was pretty colorful.
No, visualization is a really wonderful tool.
Yeah. But Zach, we have to say goodbye. We're at the end of our time now. Thank you so much for being on the show. It was really cool.
Thank you, Susan. It's been wonderful.
And I found things to ask you. So woohoo, I'm pleased.
You listened to your heart, you followed your gut, questions arose. That's all you need. Okay.
All right, let's just stay on the line for a second. I will be back, and I press the right buttons. Yes, I've got the right buttons. That was really cool. I really enjoyed that because I didn't really know what to say. I was a little bit unsure. When we've got a lot of guests coming on, sometimes you don't know what to say. So it was really nice that Zach made me feel so comfortable, and I hope he felt comfortable with the questions that I was asking, and I hope you got something out of this too, because it is only 18 inches from the head to the heart. but it's such a powerful journey, a powerful trip. And if you can get that journey right, you will be fine for the rest of your life. Doesn't matter who you come in contact with, it's going to be good. It's going to be really good. And you'll find your life will be so much brighter and happier and clearer. So jump on his website and have a look at it. And and have a look at the book. I'm going to get some of those poems. They're beautiful. All right, but that's it for me today. Like, share. Where's the buttons I've got to press? Like, share, subscribe to the podcast. Jump on the Facebook group, Intuitive Personal Development, and I do flower readings live once a week on that too, so you can have a little see what flower readings are all about, because they're our goals in life. So that's it for me today. Have a great week, and I'll catch you next week. Bye for now.